This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
Hey, it is Long Shots Golf Betting Podcast here on the VSiN Podcast Network. I am Matt Brown. That is Wes Reynolds, and the triumphant return of one Kelly Bidlin to the podcast as we get back to a signature event this week. Kelly Bidlin, I don't know if you listened to the pod while you were out. Probably not. You were dealing with family and sports books who, you know, wouldn't play sound for the draft and things like that. I'll let you know. Didn't have the winner, but I bet you can guess if I had the second place team or not. I did have the second place team, so that was cool.
Two runners up.
One for each of us.
They decided to bogey a couple holes there on the back nine and didn't get it done. But yeah, hey, fun bets that lose. It is what it is. Hey, it's a fun event. It's a fun event, everyone.
You know, Matt, I gotta jump in here because we both, of course, did have one runner up. Matt with the Norwegians, Raitan and Ventura. Myself with Springer and Smalley. I wasn't even paying attention to the same. I kind of, you know, had like the app open, but I wasn't watching. I was actually watching some playoff games, and I was actually watching other golf. I was watching the Chevron Championship, where congrats to Nelly Korda, who dominated and proved why she is clear number one now in the world. And I wasn't even paying attention. And then all of a sudden, I saw something flash, and I saw the Fitzpatrick brothers make a double bogey. And then I had Springer Smalley tied for the lead, and you eventually had Ventura and Raitan tied for the lead with the eagle at 18. A bullet hit at 18, and that eagle was like a 4-foot putt, and they made it. So got to 30 under, and that's where the Fitzpatricks were, but you knew it was a fait accompli at that point that they were going to close it out. Fitzpatrick hits an unbelievable bunker shot, and Alex Fitzpatrick tips in from about 14 inches. Now officially secures his PGA Tour card, even though he was probably going to get it on the DP World Tour, but the Fitzpatricks just, they kind of took control of the tournament after round three. Springer and Smalley actually led after the first two rounds, but they were much better in the alternate shot, even though, you know, they kind of leaked a little bit. And it's like, I don't know if I'm happy that I was given hope or I wish that they would have won by four shots and I didn't have to worry about it.
Same with me, because once I saw that, like, Ventura and Wrighton were like making a run, then I was like, oh, this is interesting. And then they end up bogeying a couple of the easier holes. And I'm just like, why did you give me hope? I just crushed my soul. I'd rather not.
I wanted them to just win by four and be done with it. And then, because Springer and Smalley, I believe, bogeyed 16, you know, hitting a putt like 12 feet by. So, So that was fun. But I mean, at least that's somebody in contention. But Fitzpatrick now two in a row, RBC Heritage and New Orleans at the Zurich. He is not playing this week. More on that in a moment. And then Alex Fitzpatrick is playing this week as a newly minted member of the PGA Tour.
Yeah, like we said, Wes, on the pod, you know, it's a fun event, and a lot of these guys are out there to, you know, just kind of take it easy. But certainly, definitely some implications for the winner, and that is the case for Alex Fitzpatrick, who now gets some signature events, gets some major invites, different things like that, his tour card and all of that. So good on him for all of that. And you know, again, I think the tournament looked well on TV, and I you know, the format and all of that I think is super interesting. I guess the last thing I do want to point out is where we say, you know, on this podcast, like, all the time, when especially when they play easier courses, which is they are the best golfers you'll ever see in your whole life. Like, the guy that you think is the best guy at your country club would just get absolutely just get waxed by these dudes. Like, so you have the Fitzpatricks go out and shoot 57 in round three. And this is not a scramble. It is a best ball, but it just goes to show how strategy changes whenever these guys, who again are the very best in the world, where once Kelly is 12 feet out and like, he's at least got a look, but like at the very least, we're going to par the hole. Like, he's going to two putt this for sure. I now, as a awesome professional golfer, can just go right at the pin. I can literally just go pin seeking. And it was actually really fun to watch the best ball part for me, because it was basically a whole bunch of these dudes just showing off, right? Because once one guy was in two putt range, then the other guy just went crazy at the flag. I mean, just went full on pin seeking. And then you get these 57s and 60s and 61s and stuff like that by teams that you're going, Doug Gim and who's even Kang hit shot 61? Like, what are you talking about? It kind of really does emphasize what we talk about as to how ridiculously talented these dudes are. But like, when you're in a tournament and there's a cut and there's a penalty, if you're, you know, if you end up like not hitting exactly where you want to and you double bogey, there's implications to all that. But when there's not in a format like this, it's kind of fun to watch them show off.
It's always fun. I think it's become another tough event in the schedule now, with all the signature events and back to back to back. Yeah. I think my biggest takeaway from it is, you know what, fellas, pretty proud of us for identifying and being on Matt Fitzpatrick very early this season and often. And it's now hit the point, though, where it's starting to feel like, man, I probably should have squeezed a few more bucks out of some of these, wins, considering how often we were on them. So Fitzy, it's been a fun run, man. I'm glad to have at least been a small part of it. But
yeah, I guess the other thing that, and again, I'm not like, this is nothing I'm even going to bring up, but I mean, I know there were people who were trying to bring up stuff about it. I mean, Shane Lowry and Brooks Koepka missed the cut. And so like, there is that, which, you know, that was at least somewhat of a story, because, you know, just like with Alex Fitzpatrick, obviously it could have meant a lot to Brooks Koepka, right, and all of that. But I mean, it's just a wonky format, right? I mean, it's just, it's weird, and some people are going to be able to thrive in it and some people are not. And, you know, so they missed the cut, but I'm not going to like, next time we're teeing it up with Brooks Koepka, be like, well, you know, he did miss the cut at the Zurich.
Right. Yeah, and it is a bizarre format, and just to see, like you were saying, the absurd scores, you know, shooting 57, it's like, oh my God, like this is really easy. And I think I saw one team, I don't know if it was Kirk and Kazire, that shot like even par on Thursday. It's like, how do you shoot even par in this format? It was one of the most bizarre things I've seen. That's like impossible, but some teams managed to do it.
And in that 57 round for the Fitzpatrick brothers, just of note before people go like, well, yeah, it's Matt Fitzpatrick, they actually used five of Alex's balls on the back nine. Like he
was better on Sunday than Matt Fitzpatrick was. I think Matt Fitzpatrick was the one that was nervous because he knew what the stakes were. And Alex Fitzpatrick, I think, was very calm, cool and collected, even though all the pressure was on him to get his PGA Tour card. But you know, he just went out and played, and I don't think really, you know, hit a lot of bad shots. It was Matt Fitzpatrick that hit a couple bad wedges that brought everybody, including a couple of our bets, at least back in the fold with a small chance.
So we are back to normal golf. And I say normal golf, this is a no cut event, so not quite normal golf, but we are at the Cadillac Championship. If that does not sound familiar, well, it shouldn't sound familiar. It is back in the rotation here as we head to the Blue Monster over at Doral in Miami, Florida. And Wes, it is a super long course that is going to play every bit of the yardage. It's going to be right there at sea level. You're not going to get any help from this whatsoever. And, you know, we don't have a lot of data on this. I mean, last time the PGA played there, a little bit of live stuff, but last time the PGA played there, we're talking 10 years ago. And 10 years ago, people didn't hit it as far as they hit it now and didn't do all the stuff that they're able to do with the golf ball. And so I don't, I guess you could say some of these guys that were able to play this 10 years ago have course experience, but I'm sure they would tell you it's a different animal for them these days as well. As you were writing the preview here, what do we need to know about the Blue Monster?
Yeah, the Blue Monster course at Doral. There are four, by the way, on the property. This one, first designed in 1962 by Dick Wilson, who also did Bay Hill, which where the Arnold Palmer Invitational is, Greenbrier, Lakeside, Cog Hill, Laurel Valley, some notable courses designed by Mr. Wilson. This is about 5 miles west, actually. It's in Doral, which is a municipality in Miami, about 5 miles west of the airport, 13 miles west of downtown Miami. And you're right, Matt, this is a different course. Gil Hance, who our listeners probably heard that name, he's kind of been the go-to guy on a lot of these redesigns in recent years. He got hired in 2014 to kind of restore this to what Dick Wilson originally designed. And the result was, this is now a longer course, 77-39, and it's been more difficult. I'll just go, you mentioned the two live events, 2024 and 2025. Keep in mind, these scores are obviously over 54 holes, but 205, 11 under par, 210, 6 under par. So that indicates, okay, the days that you had in the 2000s and the early 2010s of shooting like 24 under at this thing, which I think Tiger did one year when he won. He won four times here over the years. It got harder, and you saw it get harder when this was still on the tour. It was the WGC, the old World Golf Championship event, also the same sponsor, Cadillac Championship. And the winning scores, I think, were -4, -9, and -12 over 72 holes. So it did play a lot more difficult, not only the length, but I think that the way everything was changed on the course, it was essentially rebuilt. They reshaped the fairways. They want more angles because it's very flat terrain. So, you know, they didn't want it to just be like grip it and rip it, which it essentially was, I think, before the Hans redesigns. It had had a few remodels since it was originally laid out in 1962. The water hazards, of which there are 10 water danger holes, they repositioned them to put them more in play. And the rough was thickened a little bit, 2.5 inches. The turf is Bermuda throughout. All the greens got rebuilt, and they made them bigger, about 7,200 square feet on average. But there's more undulations. There's those mown runoff eras, which you've got that short grass that's going to challenge your short games. More on that when we talk about what we use for our stats and models and whatnot. You also have 110 bunkers on the course. That's the second most on the tour. They were rebuilt. Sharp edges, even challenge that short game even more. I guess if you're looking for comparisons, Bay Hill, PGA National, the East Course is actually a Dick Wilson design. The Concession, where they played that that workday event a few years ago during the COVID year, I believe. Quail Hollow, where the players are going to be next week. Torrey South, just because of the length. That's the only course on the PGA Tour, by the way, longer than Doral. And then some other recent PGA Championship venues, because keep in mind, PGA Championship, like, it's coming right up. It's 2 weeks away. So courses like Bethpage, like Oak Hill, that are those challenging classical designs, that's what you have here at the Blue Monster at Doral this week.
Kelly, as we take a look at this course, obviously you, I don't know if anyone that's ever listened to this podcast knows or not. Kelly used to live in South Florida. So Kelly knows about the weather down there and how the weather can certainly change. That's something that we will be monitoring. But the other thing I think we're going to be monitoring is we don't exactly know what the strategy is going to be for how these guys are going to attack this course. Now, we'll be looking as best as we can through some practice rounds and any observers maybe giving us some insight there. But we assume driver heavy, but maybe not, right? I mean, maybe through a practice round where these, you know, fairways are pinching and stuff, these guys decide that's maybe not the optimal way to go about it. And so while I think all of us are going to prioritize driver distance, with us not having the data for you know, the last 10 years here, and I do wonder if there's going to be some dudes who opt to just play longer approach shots from the fairway as opposed to hit a driver and put themselves in what could be potential danger. So I don't know. It will be interesting to me to watch. I'm going to have to handicap it the way that I think that they will play it, but I guess I can't say for certain that's how they're going to go about it.
Yeah, I'm really interested. I think it's fascinating when you get kind of courses return like this. And real quick, just while I have it up, looks like weather right now. We are recording early, by the way, for if you're catching this at home or in the car. We are doing Monday night Pacific time here this week. So weather even further out. We always remind you, check that weather as close to it as you can. But yeah, wanted to get that out there. And then, you know, Matt gets to do this every once in a while, Wes. So I tried to go play this course like 2 summers.
There you go.
But it was raining. It was raining the whole time. So I never got out. But I went to a sweet wedding there, and it was a lot of fun, I'll tell you that much.
It's going to be hot, too, this weekend down there from what I read. It's going to be real hot and humid, like maybe even some records for this time of year, because you not only got this, you got the Formula One race there, the Miami Grand Prix. So busy weekend down there in Miami, FLA.
Yeah, and you wonder, Wes, I wonder how much of that has to do with some of these guys skipping the event, too, some of the bigger bigger names. I mean, really, I just think it's a scheduling issue. They jammed all these events right around each other. It's just hard to plan out things in between the majors. I'm not really going to criticize anybody, but, you know, you go asking to go down to Miami and play in that kind of weather, right, as you're trying to in the middle of preparation for another signature event and a major. I get it why some of these guys might want to skip that, but yeah,
we're not going to read into the political ramifications of who owns this property, that being our current president. So it's like, okay, a golfer skipping this, it's like, Yeah, Lib, you're not playing this event, Lib, or whatever. It's not that. It's scheduling. Like, Fitzpatrick has obviously played 2 weeks in a row, one as well. Rory not here. There is one player that I want to get to that I was surprised isn't here. He was going to be one of the first ones, I bet. Louis Gobert not in the field this week, surprisingly enough, because I was like, man, this is like tailor-made for him, isn't it?
Yeah, you would think so. I think that's interesting because just going to that, like, Matt, I think it really is going back to the course. It is interesting because we haven't seen it in 10 years, really, right? Unless you've been watching Live Heavy, and even that, I don't think is fair to compare how that field is playing on a course like this compared to what we saw from the PGA Tour's best 10 years ago. So, look, I think you kind of get the rough outline of what we should expect from the course, and we kind of know what we're going to get from that standpoint. We know the water. We know it's going to be helpful to be long off the tee. West just went through the rough and everything, and the green complexes are always tricky around them, on them. We kind of know that, but as far as things like you're talking about, what are they going to take off the tee? What are they going to do with long iron play? I think the game has changed a lot in 10 years, and I think you want to be a little careful assuming too much on things this week.
Yeah, we're looking at a course that has three of the four par threes are over 200 yards. The par fives are 600 yards. I mean, like, this is just going to be a real test of how you go and navigate this. I mean, there's going to be very, very few opportunities to get home in two for most of these guys, especially if wind is blowing. So then it kind of changes your outlook on par five scoring and what goes on with all of that. And so, yeah, it's just a super, super interesting handicap. And, like, look, these are not the ones that are necessarily my favorite when I don't have exactly what I'm looking for. And I'm kind of doing a little bit of speculating and a little bit of guessing. But I feel fairly confident that we're going to of what we're going to get with this core. I think it's just going to be a long, hard grind for the majority of these players out there, which kind of eliminates some of the players right off of the bat for me when it comes down to it. So, okay. So stats that we are looking at this week, our usual disclaimer: we are not coders. We are leaning into the hard work of others. Shout out to all the people we use every week, Data Golf, Experts, Rick Rungood, all of the different sites out there that we are going in and utilizing the work of those guys. And so, Kelly, I'll start with you. What did we throw into this model this week? I'm curious to see the three of us where we landed similarly and where we kind of parted ways here.
Yeah, fairly heavy off the tee to begin with. And look, strokes gained off the tee, driving distance, and I think, some accuracy stats matter this week as well. Just avoiding some of that rough. Yes, you have some wider fairways, but distance over accuracy for me this week, but both important. So really weighing all of that. And then on approach, strokes gained approach, I went heavy there. And then I did a little bit of like opportunities gained with the bigger greens and proximity. I just went 200 plus. I think you could dial that back in maybe to 175 plus if you want. But we're going to see some long iron shots be tested this week. So went there. Par fives, you brought it up, Matt. I think it's going to be interesting. Like, maybe this is one of the more fascinating switches from 10 years ago, right? How many of these guys can get to these really long par fives in two or just even closer chances in three to set them up with a scoring chance? I'm interested to see that, but regardless, I think it's important to weigh this week. And then I did a little bit of mix of around the green, some scrambling, bogey avoidance, all of that. And that was pretty much it. And then I kind of plugged in like long course history, difficult course history, that sort of stuff. So like I was saying, we have some of the bones that I feel like I could pull off of from in the past, but also trying to not go too in-depth specific on stats that, maybe we're not sure apply here though, because we haven't seen this in 10 years. We haven't seen these guys play.
Yeah, I pretty much with the model like you talked about, for me, I did add some three putt avoidance, lag putting stuff, just because these are big greens. Yeah. And so I'm okay. I think, we'll see. I could be wrong. I think pars are going to be good like here. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if we're in kind of that 9, 10, 11, 12 range for the winter for the tournament. And so like, I think pars are going to be good. So I want a dude who's not, three putting out there and doing kind of crazy stuff and all that. But outside of that, pretty much the same stuff for me. What about you, Wes?
Yeah, I'm going to jump in real quick, Wes, because I just pulled this up. You were going through it, and I think I kind of took it the same way. I'm expecting this to be tougher scoring. Just pulled up Westgate with the total score, winning score 275.5. So, you know, would expect over under 12.5 under, right? Am I doing that math right? Yeah. So that's that felt a little steep to me. I don't know. I rarely bet those, but the under might be a look for me this week.
Yeah, I think that this is going to play a little bit more like a PGA. It's not going to play, I think, totally like a U.S. Open, where we've seen some of these, especially if the wind blows, like that mm-hmm. 4 underscore I mentioned. That's because the wind was really blowing. I don't expect it to be that much this week. It is going to be hot and humid, though. But I would think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it was single digits or like right at 10 under. So I went a little bit more general. To start, I went with strokes gained tee to green, which is about as general as you can get from a strokes gained category. But just because I wanted guys that were kind of showing complete games, with the exception of the short game stuff. It really shows, I think, you know, just a general sense of how some of these players are striking the ball. I did go approach. I think it's going to be important this week. And These are big greens, like I mentioned earlier, 7,200 square feet. So you want to get them as close, obviously, as you can. Like, you know, nothing unusual about that. I'll tie that into something else I used a little bit later. Proximity, 200 plus. You maybe could make an argument that you use those short wedges, or if you have runoffs around the green where you're going to get some like weird yardage pitch shots. But I think probably concentrating on the longer irons is better served for this. Driving distance, strokes gained, if you want to, depending on what, you know, funnel you want to use or what terminology you want to use at the various sites, whether it's Rick Run Good or Bet Spurts or Fantasy National or wherever, long and difficult courses, because that's what this is at the Blue Monster, is a long and difficult course. So you can do something like that. I think around the green might be a little bit more important than meets the eye here. Even though these greens are big and they would seem like they're easy to hit, you're going to have these runoffs here. So that's going to test your short game. And plus the fact that a lot of these greens are very well protected, and a lot of water hazards are in front of several of these greens. So there's going to be time, you know, it's like, okay, you hit it in the green going for two, and then it's a four, and you got to save it for a five. So strokes gained around the green, scrambling percentage. Matt mentioned bogey avoidance. I haven't really done much outside of general putting this year, but this Bermuda, like they putted on Bermuda, but it's been overseeded with Poa-Triv. Maybe not as much this week because the temperatures have been warmer down in Miami. Also, the greens, they did get a little bit of rain recently, so you might get soft greens. But I think the Bermuda is going to be a little less dormant than we've seen. And that's why, because of the Poa overseed, whenever I've done putting, I've done like basically general putting statistics instead of going really specific with the surface. I went a little more specific this week, but it's going to be small anyway. It's not a huge, I think, percentage of what we're overall doing. And then, you know, three putt avoidance, because these greens are so big, like I mentioned, 7,200 square feet, you hit it on the wrong side, you're going to have some tough leaves for bars here, where, you know, those knee knockers, you know, those mid-range putts, those 7 to 10 footers that you got to hit the safe bar, gonna be tough. Even though these greens aren't super fast, they're like gonna be, I think, 12 on the stamp, which is about average speed. And the fact that these greens might be a little softer with the rain, so it could slow the speed down at least a little bit. But that's basically what I did. And we are kind of flying blind here. We're going on like previous results, not necessarily strokes gained data or any shot link stuff, because obviously you don't have that really on LIV. But you kind of look at some previous leaderboards here, and I think you can get a good idea of who plays well. And more often than not, it's not a journeyman. It's more often than not a class player that has won at Doral over the years on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, that's kind of probably going to be the theme here for me as well, is just trying to keep it there. So Kelly's popped open the odds. As you take a look, no shock, Scottie Scheffler is going to be your short shot here at plus 310. That's at DraftKings. All as always, shop around. But then we dropped Cam Young because there is no Matt Fitzpatrick. There is no Rory McIlroy. There is no Ludwig Oberg. So gets to Cam Young, and that really kills his price. $1,250 at DraftKings, but that's pretty much where we are industry-wide. Colin Morikawa, Tommy Fleetwood, Patrick Cantlay, Siwoo Kim, Russell Henley, Chris Goddard, Sam Burns are all sub-30. And then a handful of guys between 30 and 40 include Minwoo Lee, Matt McNeely, Jake Knapp, Hideki, Victor Hovland, Justin Rose, and then everybody else is 40-1 or longer. Kelly, when you looked at the odds board, when you kind of decided how you were going to play this and you liked the different guys and you went in and placed your bets, did anything jump off of the page from an odds perspective?
Man, you know what? Not really, actually, this week. I thought everything seemed just about right. I think there's still, I think we'd be seeing Morikawa probably even at a shorter number here if there was even more confidence in just any lingering injury issue stuff, right? At least that's how I'm kind of reading it. I think you have no concerns about Morikawa, then this is not a bad price on him at all. Cantlay's rising up the odds board compared to everybody else, but I think that's fair with how he's played recently. Really not mad. We've definitely opened this up in weeks past, and it's kind of been like, whoa, I'm kind of surprised in this ordering or how close these guys were, but this all seemed about right to me.
Wes, I guess for me, just go back to this guy, because I know this is a guy you were trying to try to get back on before he got back into the winner's circle or something, but I guess seeing Cantlay, you know, kind of back in that elite tier as far as the odds go. I mean, he is fifth shot on the board here. Man, I understand we are missing a few players, but we often talk about win equity when we're betting these outrights, and he has not been able to win very often.
No, he hasn't. So I guess I was a little bit surprised to see that in terms of the prices here, and also no Xander. So we do have a few guys not there, but Scotty, Cameron Young, Morikawa, Tommy Fleetwood, and then you get into a bunch of guys that are kind of in that 25-1, and obviously shop around. You might be able to find a couple ticks better on some of these prices, but Russell Henley, Chris Goddard, Sam Burns, Patrick Cantlay, we're all kind of in that 25-ish, and then Siwoo, Hideki right below that. But you do have some short-range prices here. Like I'm seeing like somebody like Jordan Spieth as low as 40-1. Right. Ricky Fowler in like the what I would call the true mid range, I guess, in an only 72 player field. Ricky Fowler, some places at like 45-1. And it's like, man, you know, like these guys, some of these guys are like triple digits to win the PGA in a couple of weeks. And that seems like a shortish one. A couple guys that have actually won here that you've seen kind of 33 to 35-ish. I'm just kind of ballparking the average here. Justin Rose and Adam Scott won here. Scott on the redesign. He was the last guy in the PGA Tour to win here in 2016. And Justin Rose won here many years ago. So those are the only two guys that are in this field that have won on this course in a professional event. But yeah, you've got, you know, with 72 in the signature event. So you got some guys at the bottom where it's a big difference. And you know, you're looking at guys and it's like, okay, are they really that long enough here? And you have your fair share of bombers that have won here over the years. If you go back and look at some of the results of the Doral Ryder Open or the Cadillac Championship, like you've had the Dustin Johnsons of the world win here, and Tiger and Adam Scott, and those guys that can obviously get it out there. But you've also had some of the Patrick Reeds win here. And Patrick Reed, by the way, not in this field as of yet, or yet on the PGA Tour, I should say. But you don't have, like, it's not all bomber, bomber, bomber. So even though we said about including distance, that doesn't mean that it's like all bombers necessarily here. You can ball strike and win at Doral for sure.
And, you know, with it being a limited field, you know, guys, again, your numbers that you're getting, certainly the numbers that you're getting in like top 20 markets and things, just understand it's a 72 player field, also guaranteed four rounds. So those are all playing into the odds with that. I mean, we are talking, there are currently 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There are 10 of the 72 are 200-1 or longer to win the tournament, right? So just, you know, again, keep in mind when a price doesn't look quite as juicy as normal, well, there's also some dead money, to use a gambling term, use some poker term for you. There's also some dead money here in this thing, including Brian Campbell, who is 1,250 to 1.
Oh man,
1,250 to 1.
By the way, Wes, dead money. That's what
they said. He is going to have to gain like 10 strokes putting to, you know, even like be in
1,250 to 1. So if you want a true long shot, you're not going to get much bigger than that out there. That is that is for sure. So okay, so we plugged in the stuff here and we went ahead and made some bets here. And again, guys, this is being recorded on Monday evening, by the way, thanks to Wes and Kelly accommodating my schedule here. So there might be some stuff added, as always, over on VSiN.com. If you're not already a VSiN Pro subscriber, we're running a special. I know, shocker, we're running a special. There's a special over there right now, $15 from now until June the 6th. So you can get everything we do over the next couple of months for $15 at VSiN.com. But Wes, go ahead, fire it off here. What'd you put in the account?
Yeah, I've only got a couple right now. I'll have the full card. By the way, all of us will have our full cards up at VSiN.com/picks. Column will come out on Tuesday, as it usually does, Tuesday afternoon. But a couple I did bet today, and one of them is a pretty short shot now. It has drifted down anywhere like 12-1. I did play Cameron Young here. I just think that the ball that he has the length. And he also has the approach game here. And I think he's really kind of showing all the tools in his arsenal, having won the Players' Championship. God, it's a low price. I understand that because you're used to seeing him in the signature events or even major championships at around 20-1. But I think he came out, some of the openers might have been like 15-14 that I saw, but Cameron Young, I think, is one that you got to be willing to play here and not try to hit so many bombs in a field that I think that there's a clear gap between some of the top guys and even some of the middle guys. So Cameron Young is one that I have played. I have also played Kurt Kitayama, who is as high as 50-1 on Monday. I still think a little bit out there. This is a guy we know he can win on these tough courses in Florida. Remember, he won Bay Hill a couple of years ago at the API, where he held off Rory and he held off Scotty and he held off Patrick Cantlay and all these really elite players. So Kurt Kitayama is another guy that I think could play very well this week. One I am considering, even though you're not getting a bargain on the price, because it's not like he's a frequent guy that has won yet on the PGA Tour. And I haven't done this yet, but I mentioned earlier that I thought Ludwig Aubert was kind of a tailor-made fit for this place. There's another guy that I think is a pretty good fit here, and that's Jake Knapp, who I believe you can get at, 30-1? I think I'm seeing like a 32 or a 35 out there. So that's a guy. I realize that he's not considered the class of player because, you know, he's got the one PGA Tour win. The guy's played great this year, and this just strikes me as a course where he can, I don't want to say tear it apart, because I think it's gonna be difficult, but he's got the game. I think like he's got the profile. You want a guy that has good iron play and can also bomb it long on this place, and that certainly fits Jake Knapp, I think, to a T.
Kelly, what about you, my friend?
Yeah, Knapp was one I thought was interesting. Any major concerns after what you saw out of the Heritage at all? I mean, the putter went ice cold.
Yeah, I just think that's maybe not the perfect course
of
for
course.
Him
yeah.
necessarily because yeah. it's short and you got to pull less than driver. And there are just so many guys that can do that. And I don't think that's Jake Knapp's game.
Yeah, someone I'm considering, though. Obviously, the pod has loved him all season long. I feel like Matt's love affair started longer before ours, even way last season with him. But a off-the-bet golfer this year on the Long Shots podcast. I am with you on Cameron Young, my friend. I punched that one in already. I played him 13-1 outright. Still waiting for some of the books to open up here in Vegas, so I'm going to shop this one. I do think I'm going to play him in the winter without market, without Scheffler as well. Probably just go a little bit smaller bet on that. I'm seeing 9-1 at Caesars right now. I want to see what a couple of these other shops open that up at. Yes, I'm scared of Scotty. I don't think this is a single bullet Scotty week for me, but man, talk about games that fit well for this course. It doesn't get much better for Scotty Scheffler here. So definitely scared of Scotty this week. But man, Cameron Young, it's, you know, we were looking at some of the stats as you were going through things, Wes, as you were going through Cam, and it's hard to ignore what he is doing off the tee, on approach, a putter. I mean, one bad putting week, but even around the green's been pretty solid here the past couple weeks. Stepping up big at the Masters, just coming up short. I'm right back there with you, my friend, on Cameron Young. So started my card there. It's not going to be much in the outright. So him in the outright market, and then probably winner without. Want to see where that number goes. And then I jumped on a Goddard up 30-1. No, he's trailed off a little bit. I was betting him a lot at the beginning of the season. The numbers aren't as spectacular here recently, but man, he's still so long and gaining off the tee so consistently. I think this course is just going to help set up well for him, just because he's going to be able to take advantage in that area. And even when the approach hasn't been as amazing as it was early in the season, it's still green and he's still gaining on the field consistently time in and time out. Last seven events, he's gained on approach. So that's solid. The around the green's always pretty good. That putter can pop with him. I do like Goddard up and how he lines up for this course. And look, we talk about guys that win still three times in the last 17 events that he's played in. Pretty damn good for outright win percentage. So went with Goddard up there. And then the other one I think I'm going to add, I have not bet yet, but I'm not missing out this time, fellas. He's red hot right now, and he's my guy. I'm going back to Gary Woodland, I think, this week. It has just been really, really good numbers here these past few weeks. He was, my last 16-round model, he was my fourth-rated golfer, 13th off the tee, second distance, 18th on approach. The putter's been hot. 9th in bogey avoidance. Scrambling's numbers are really good. In case you missed it, it's been a T8 at the RBC Heritage, T33 at the Masters, and then he won the Houston Open, and a T14 at the Valspar. So Woodland's really cruising right now, man. I'm gonna keep riding that. I think I'm gonna play him lightly in the outright market, but then some top 10s and top 20s more on Woodland there. And that's probably gonna be it for the outright card. Obviously, I'm betting a 13-1. So pretty short. The other names that I'm going to get involved in with placements, Patrick Cantlay, we talked about him. I'm not going to go crazy. Never loved betting Patrick Cantlay, but man, he's been playing some good golf here recently. T8 at the Heritage, T12 at the Masters, T7 at the Valspar. Really starting to look like he's finding his game, and the around the green game really been crisp from him recently over that time. So I'm going to go Cantlay, probably top 10, top 20. And then the other name that I had circled, Matt, I know you've bet him a few times. I think we've all bet him at least once so far this season. But Sam Stevens, just a longer shot guy. I'm going to play probably top 10, top 20, 15th in distance, 6th in good drive. So accurate and long off a tee, off the tee. Good on approach. 10th in opportunities gained in this field over the last 16 rounds. That stuck out to me. Yes, he was T13 at the Zurich, but I'm not going to go crazy over that. I usually toss those results out pretty much. T24 at the Masters, you'll remember, in 5th at Houston. So, yeah, I did end up targeting a lot of guys that finished pretty well at Houston. Obviously not as much of the water to worry about there that you're going to have off the tee here. A lot of danger off the tee here, but yes, concentrated on distance and some of the more premier ball strikers. I would say, though, this is some of the super great long iron players, and we talked about that before, Matt. Is that going to matter maybe a little bit more, a little bit less than we're expecting? Yeah, there's no Morikawa on my list, right? There's none of these guys that we kind of know are the crisp and best at kind of 200+. So I might be flirting with a little bit of danger there, but that's what the card's looking like for now.
I do want to start out with just the Scotty discussion. Again, if you watch golf on the regular, the talk of Scotty's demise is so ridiculously overblown. The guy is absurd. He is number one in this field in strokes gained total over the last 28 rounds, which is 7 tournaments and whatever. Like, I mean, he's ridiculous. I mean, like, look, if this is a slump, then sign me the frig up, right? Yeah. Like, if this is a slump, sign me up. He wins the Amex T3, T4, T12, T24, T22, second and second. Sign me up for the slump.
Well, yeah, it's just scary with, I think it's scary with the added short game stuff too, right? Like, it's just, he's so, what he's been able to do putting this year, and then just like the around the green, he's just one of the best around the green players that's on the PGA Tour. Not that that's necessarily new, but he's just like one of the best. We usually always focus off the tee and on approach, but he's one of the best there.
One database I looked at had him number one over the last 24 rounds. I'm glad you brought up the around the green stuff, because not only that, it's really been the approach where it's like, okay, that's what we see as his strength, or I guess one of his strengths. And, you know, he led the world for about 3 years with the irons. So you can only go down a little bit from there, but he's starting to kind of get better. You know, you're seeing, you saw a very good approach week at Augusta. I think another one there at the RBC when he, you know, took Fitzpatrick to that playoff. The off the tee, he's gaining a little bit more. And he always has gained pretty well off the tee where he's, you know, higher end in the rankings. But I saw one that had him top five off the tee last 24 rounds. It's been the approach where he's like 39th. And that, and but, and these rankings, by the way, are in this field, not overall on the tour necessarily. So, you know, those approach numbers, I think going into Augusta, I remember just the general PGA Tour rankings, he was like 90th or something. So you can see that they're absolutely improving, and he's going to be busy because he's not taking. We talked about the guys that were missing this week. He's not taking in any weeks off. He has this event. He's playing Quail Hollow, of course, next week, and then at Aronimink for the PGA. And then being a Texas guy, he's not taking off after that PGA either. He's going to be playing the Byron Nelson. He's going to be playing Colonial there for the Charles Schwab. And then I think he does the Memorial. I believe the Memorial is the first week in June. I haven't looked that far ahead, but he's going to be playing like several weeks in a row. So he's going to be one of the busier high-end players, I think, on the tour here in short couple months.
Yeah, you know, again, if it was five and not three, maybe single bullet Scotty week, but they're not going to ever give us that. And so I move on because it is still only one person that wins a golf tournament. And that's my only deal with Cam Young. I know both y'all are on Cam Young. I wanted to be on Cam Young. He is second in the model, obviously, to Scotty. I mean, like, he's basically been the second best player in the world to Scotty, at least in this field anyway. I just couldn't get it. Maybe I'm snake bit a little bit from the Masters as well, where it's just like he didn't go get it when it was there for the taking. And I don't know if that's still in the back of my mind and whatever. So I started with the other guy we've talked about, and I started with Colin. I think he is very clearly the third best player in this field, and if I knew he was completely healthy, I think the odds between him and Cam Young would be negligible. I mean, like, when the different skill sets that they bring to the table, while Colin's not as long, he's more accurate, while he's you know, doesn't putt nearly as well as Cam Young does, but his long irons are better. It's just, you know, again, I think that they kind of, where one excels, the other one isn't quite there. Well, then the other one excels in those categories as well. So I started with Colin, and I mean, look, it's, I mean, he withdrew, but outside of that, it's a win, it's a seventh, a fifth, a seventh, and a fourth. I mean, it's like, you know, it's, if he's going to keep playing, then I can't just assume that he's out there playing hurt, you know? I mean, like, so the results are there. So I played Colin.
If that back's really hurting him, he gained 4.3 strokes over the field on approach at the freaking Masters, and then 5.7 at RBC.
Here. Now, I was gonna ask about that. Are you worried about like the ball speed here? He's won, I think, on longer courses before. I know I mentioned the concession where he won that Workday event a few years ago. Are you worried about that, or you think maybe a week respite, you know, gets him a little bit right here?
Yeah. And honestly, if he's going to be in the fairway, I mean, if he's 295, but he's in the fairway as well as he hits the long irons, like, I would be more concerned about it with almost any other golfer in the field than I am with Colin. He's just so, so, so good with the long irons that I'll roll the dice with it and roll with him. We just, the, my, the, two of the three other guys we've already talked about. I'll get to the one that we didn't talk about. And this is going to be kind of the make or break, prove it to me week. If Minwoo is for real, or if that was just a heater that he was on. But if you want to talk about a course that should be built for a guy like Minwoo, it would be this course. You kind of find him as high as 33-1 out there in the market. Maybe he was just on a heater and he isn't as good as we were all trying to make him out to be. He certainly has not lived up to what we thought he could do over the last several starts. And so with that, I'm going to go one more time on a course that should fit him very, very, very well. If you look at the modeling stuff and all of that, obviously the distance is there. He's actually pretty accurate with the driver as well. If you look at the good drive stuff and everything, he's pretty good with that. You can see basically green down the board on the off the tee stuff, but certainly don't like the Masters and Heritage stuff that we have there, but Minwoo, prove it to me, buddy. This course should fit you.
Yeah, I think that's the right attitude with him. I think it's kind of funny how you said that about the snake bitten line about Cameron Young, because I almost feel that way about Minwoo after loading up at him at the Masters, and it was like, all right, that was a quick injection, and then he didn't follow it up with a nice event. So I hear you, Matt. I mean, this of course is that should fit him perfectly. This is it. But yeah, it was a pretty easy for me to move on from him, actually.
Yeah, and you kind of have to trust your numbers a little bit this week, because we talked about the fact that this course has not been on the PGA Tour since 2016. So I was counting up. We have 72 players in the field. We only have 17 players that have actually played a tournament on this course. I'm sure some guys have played some practice rounds or, you know, with some corporate sponsors or whatever, but you really only have the 17 guys out of 72. You don't see that very often unless it's obviously at a major championship or something. So you really do kind of have to take a leap of faith a little bit with your numbers on what you think is important, whether it's approach or distance or what have you. It's kind of like you had to have to pick a lane and just let the chips fall where they may.
And I don't have to really expand. It's two other guys already talked about here. I played Knapp and Woodland. I think Knapp for the course fit. I think Woodland, I just think the odds are kind of disrespectful for Woodland as well, as good as he's been playing right now. I mean, they're market high, like 75-1 out there right now on Gary Woodland, where he is playing better than a whole lot of guys at shorter odds than him. And I think his win equity, given what he brings to the table, is a lot higher than a lot of the guys with shorter odds in that. So, rounding out that card with Knapp and Woodland, when the top 20 markets get populated, I mean, I can give you some names I'm definitely going to consider. Nicolai Højgaard, Adam Scott, Ricky Fowler are all guys that I think, like, I don't know what the win equity is, but I think a top 20 finish in a guaranteed 4-round tournament with 10 guys that are basically dead on arrival.
I was going to bring up Adam Scott actually to see if you guys actually considered him, because if you look at form, you know, course form, like I said, it's very rare here. Boy, does he fit here, and he's won here, and you know, and the numbers are even pretty good for the guy. So, you know, it was a little bit low. I think probably placement market for me is the way to go with Adam Scott this week. How about you guys?
That's where I'm going to land on that with him. And then I'm going to try to find some head to heads with Jordan Smith, because he modeled out very, very well for me. And my guess is he's going to be paired up against like much weaker players maybe than the course fit for him. So that's going to be another guy that I'm going to try to play on, so long as I can get some decent head to heads with him there on that one. Some other guys that modeled well for me that I'm just not on as we get ready to close this thing out here. Yella Muraju modeled well for me.
Yeah.
Justin Rose and his new F1 irons that he's going to be playing modeled well for me.
Justin Rose modeled way too well for me, just throwing that out there. Wes mentioned he's a guy who's had success on this course before. I was pretty shocked by that. I think the new irons I'm going to kind of use as a reason to avoid him, but I did play him in a matchup over Harris English. That's the only matchup I've made. So
and he's certainly practiced with these. He just hadn't played them in competition. But, you know, Nicolai Højgaard was another one that modeled well for me as well.
Race car irons, baby. Let's do this.
The McLaren irons.
Let's go. Let's get some Ferrari irons in there as well. If we're going to start doing this, you know, like I'll buy some Ferrari irons, some Porsche iron, Lamborghini irons, whatever it might be. Guys, if you haven't done so already, Appreciate the support here. Hit that subscribe button, whether it's on the audio side, whether it's on the YouTube side. We do appreciate you guys coming with us each and every week along for the ride. As we said, the full cards are going to be over at VSiN.com/subscribe. So go in. $15 now to June the 6th. So go in. It's worth it. You win one bet. You've already paid for your last couple of months. For Wes, for Kelly, I am Matt. Good luck on all your Cadillac bets.